Bloomberg News is reporting that a roadwork slowdown looms after Congress left town yesterday without replenishing the Highway Trust Fund. The fund is expected to be depleted as soon as next month, leaving 112,000 construction projects and 700,000 jobs waiting word on federal funding. And that's nothing, according to a report released today from 50 companies and experts from local government to academics. It calls for a cabinet-level infrastructure secretary, for the sale of bonds to raise capital, and for engaging the American people in a massive rebuilding because of the infrastructure repair that's needed. The report is called Making the Grade, a reference to the failing grades engineers give U.S. infrastructure. Terry Bennett, senior industry strategist for infrastructure at the design technology firm Autodesk, was part of the team. So, Terry, make the case for a Secretary of Infrastructure.
Right now, we need around $2 trillion to fix and repair all of the U.S. infrastructure that's in need of repair. And it goes well beyond just roads and bridges, but water systems, electric utilities, sewer systems. And that is projected to go to $3.6 trillion, according to the American Society of Civil Engineers, by 2020. So when you look at $3.6 trillion needed to keep the U.S. competitive in the world, and we're number 14 in relation to our infrastructure, not number one anymore like we were in the 50s, to have that much of an effort requires really needed leadership and very specific leadership. And that was one of the things that the firms believed in, is that the infrastructure in the U.S. has a dramatic effect on the economy and can be both an accelerator or a drag if our infrastructure fails around us.
And it's only getting more endangered as we see the changing weather.
Absolutely. You know, even if there was no weather changes, infrastructure wears out over time. There's more population than was originally intended on the infrastructure that's built today, that was built 50 years ago. So you add that combination of that with either weather events, the urban population move, it's putting a lot of strain on infrastructure that was never designed to carry that capacity.
Just give us one example of how we're affected by faulty infrastructure. The report compares time sitting in traffic in the U.S. and other countries that are spending more on infrastructure.
If you remember, not too long ago, we had a big electrical blackout when we had ice take down some of the northeast corridors and the systems. Mm-hmm. And sadly, it contributed to 11 deaths, but it cost an estimated $6 billion in economic loss. The more startling ones we see is, you know, the I-35 bridge collapse in Minneapolis in 2007. Again, 13 deaths. The economic losses were estimated at $400,000 to $1 million a day, and it took 13 months to rebuild. We hear in the news reports around water mains breaks, flooding streets. There's a never-ending supply of these challenges. We've designed them for a life expectancy that passed long ago in many cases.
You mentioned water main breaks, 240,000 every year. But you talked about the 50s and when the U.S. was number one. What's happened? You talk about a sense on the part of Americans that, well, we did that and it's done. How do you change that thinking, and why does that thinking have to be changed?
That was the last great vision we had for U.S. infrastructure was under Eisenhower, and it really has been updated, refreshed since the 50s. Now, we've done small pockets of it for certain things, but to holistically look across the U.S., irregardless of state or location, and say, this is the vision that we want for be able to people to drive from one side of the country to the other on great roads. And, you know, it took a lot of effort, but the people, as you said, were behind it. And what we wanted to do as part of this, and the U.S. has assumed that is, you know, you build it once and it was done and we're all good, but things change. We have to be competitive. The U.S. is number 14 in the world, no longer number one. You know, you think of an example down south when the Panama Canal is being upgraded, the massive ships that'll go through there, where there's very few, if any, ports on the East Coast that can even handle them. So our infrastructure, even though maybe working, has been outdated and really marginalized in some cases. And in infrastructure, until you turn on the faucet and your water doesn't work or the light switch doesn't work, Americans do not have what I would say was the esprit de corps that they had in the 50s.
But how are you going to change that? Because Americans now think they don't have the money. The U.S. spends just under 2% of the GDP on infrastructure. That's compared to Europe, which is at 5%. And then India and China are at 9% and 11%. Of course, they are where we were in the 50s. They're just beginning, you know, to invest in this kind of a thing. But when you look at polls, 38% of Americans, according to Pew, want to spend more on roads and infrastructure. 43% want to stay the way it is. How do you change that?
You know, the idea behind this vision was to create a path towards regaining and sustaining Americans' leadership. And part of that is rekindling the initiative and the investment in the innovation. You know, we invest, you know, around 5% of investment, public-private investment. You know, you look at the big pension funds invest in real estate. If we had a comparable investment in infrastructure, that would be a $1 trillion investment overnight. We know we don't have all the money that is going to be needed to fix all the infrastructure initially, but what we wanted to do was to create a plan that allows us to rationalize and prioritize which projects need to be built to meet with a predestined future that we want versus having it be an emotional discussion, as happens at many local and state and even federal levels, over where to spend the dollars.
The other thing the report says is that people can buy bonds to raise infrastructure capital. But there's a phrase here that's interesting: to fulfill our generational obligation. Are you going to ask people just to give money for infrastructure? There's taxes, there's fees, there's ways to raise money. But are you thinking that Americans should be asked just to give money?
In some cases, absolutely. If you look at the war bonds, people are asked to donate for the building of the war effort, you know, in World War II. It was the same problem. There was no single source of money that could ever build and finance what was needed. And the rallying cry came around. That was the, as I mentioned earlier, the esprit de corps, people getting together because it was in the best interest of the United States. You know, we see the same thing here. Having first-class infrastructure attracts investment into the United States versus out of the United States to other countries. It creates the opportunities for jobs. If people understand the value of the infrastructure, and they understand that the dollars that go into these bonds will be spent through the banks that really rationalize how it's being spent, that it's really focused on a strategic asset of infrastructure, not just an emotional, well, this is my pet project, then they'll want to invest because, you know, we were the benefits of the investment of our parents. What we have today, much of that infrastructure came out of their pockets, not ours. There is absolutely a reason why we should also set up and make sure the infrastructure that we hand off is even better and, more importantly, focused on where the U.S. is going to be in 25 to 30 years, not the U.S. of yesterday, but the U.S. of tomorrow.
And just to be clear, these bonds, these opportunity bonds that people can buy, will they get them back? Will they cash them in? How do you think that is going to work?
That would be the idea, that these would be no different than a savings bond. They would mature. You could turn them back in. You know, the idea was to think about ways of funding that allows a public-private partnership. I mean, people hear that term a lot nowadays in infrastructure, but is that some of the money comes from private investors, which are the pension funds and the large investment banks. Some come from the public, which are the people here, and some come from the government. The idea being is that if it's a very transparent process, as some of the items we laid out in the report, once you have transparency, you understand the decision-making process, and then you can understand whether that's a worthwhile investment to you or not. People invest in bonds of all types now in any sort of portfolio. Why not one around infrastructure, which has more of an impact on our GDP, our jobs, and our economy than probably any other sector? Because without really functioning infrastructure, we have a real problem as a country to do anything well.
That's Terry Bennett. He's senior industry strategist for infrastructure at the design technology firm Autodesk and one of the authors of the report Making the Grade, a national six-point plan to regain America's infrastructure leadership, asking people, among other things, to invest in rebuilding the country's infrastructure. Terry, thanks for talking to us about it.
Thank you, Robin.
And Robin, another thing about infrastructure, many people say the borrowing costs right now in this country are so low, it's the perfect time to be building.
Yep. We have to have the will. Here now is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now.